You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Daniel K. Isaac, welcome back to Token Theater Friends.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my God, of course, it's such a pleasure. I'm so happy to be here with you because we are kicking off the month of March. That's going to be all special programming. And the theme for the month is going to be Thank You, Theater Makers.
Hey.
Thank you for all that you have done for us. For the world. Okay, now I'm gonna cry. Because it's been a hard year, and the idea for this theme was that, you know, you have kept inspiring us. I'm talking to you as if you're all theater makers, which you kind of are. But yeah, anyway, I'll stop talking, and I just wanna hear about your year.
I think that's a great month's theme, to thank all the folks who may be out of work but are still trying to make things, maybe not in the most traditional of ways or not in the ways we were trained to or expected to make our art form and our craft. But people have really persevered and reinvented and reinvigorated, I feel, this medium. So thanks for having me for this theme and episode.
Oh yeah, of course, I'm very happy. So, you know, now I'm gonna go like straight to like business. No. You have reinvented yourself in many ways, at least, you know, for the public, right? Like maybe you were always a writer, but we didn't know about it. And for the past year, you had a play last year, and you are about to have a play come out in a month. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I feel that I was always a hesitant writer and nervous to give myself permission to call myself that. And I really was inspired by colleagues around me who took on the multi-hyphenate label with no shame, or even if they felt an imposter syndrome about it, they overcame it. And so that really inspired me. To name a few off the top of my head, people like Chihe Park, who was getting her master's in acting when I was an undergrad at UCSD. And then she won, I feel like, every playwriting award possible with her play Hannah and the Dread Gazebo. And people like Brian Quijada with his one-man show, and William Jackson Harper having a play at EST and being on The Good Place, and so many others. Claire Barron, just... I always wanted to write, and I felt like there was a point in my career where I lacked artistic agency or voice, and that to write was my way of exercising it or trying to summon it back or find inspiration or create shows and characters and stories that reflected my world more or what I wanted to see in our industry and in storytelling. And so while the pandemic shuttered my off-Broadway would-be premiere last year, companies like Mai Theater Company have been so supportive and enduring in their support. And so this coming April, there'll be a reading, a green screen reading of my play, Once Upon a Korean Time, which tackles Korean fables and folk tales and fairy tales, along with historical and present day points of trauma and tragedy and difficulties facing the Korean and Korean American people. And so, yeah, I guess I have really reinvented from just being an actor and embracing the writer side of myself as well.
And let me just tell you that that of the play is so beautiful.
Thank you for reading it.
It is so, it's so enchanting. And I mean, I kept thinking about that word constantly. I was enchanted. And I wish I could say that it was, it could be a page turner because you can't turn pages on your iPad. But I felt it was a page scroller.
Thank you.
It was so beautiful. And I was very curious when I was reading it about how, first of all, did you write it during the pandemic?
No, I had started it before, and I had had a one-day reading of it at Ensemble Studio Theater when I was a member of their Young Blood Writers Group, which is a 30 and under writers group. And that was my last reading because I aged out of it. And then New York Theater Workshop offered me a reading, and Ralph Pena directed that one as well. And now Ralph has been championing it with Mayi Theater, and my former roommate works for NYU in the Lit Department, and they are hosting a series of works centered on women and women in storytelling, female identifying in storytelling, and she organized this play to be a part of that, as it hopefully centers women in it, and created a whole panel and talkback series, which I just feel so honored by, because it feels like a labor of love from all different directions and unexpected places at that. So,
I would say I can't imagine, but I can't. I'm just like, I was very curious because you're like fine tuning it and getting ready, I guess, for what's coming for, you know, in its life. How did not having, you know, physical theater, so to speak, or being able to be in community change anything? Well, did it change anything?
The play has a lot of magic, and it has a lot of unabashed theatricality, which for me, every play I write, I hope can be a love letter to the medium of theater. And so it was hard for me to first let go of what couldn't happen in a shared space and on stage. And something amazing that Mayi has done is they've turned their rehearsal space into a green screen / film studio. And so all the actors this week have been going in one day at a time with a camera operator and a technician and the actor in the room and everyone else on Zoom. Oh, and Ralph is in the room directing. Very distant, with masks on, the windows are open, they have the air ventilator going, and everyone's getting tested, of course. And I feel like I've come to be so grateful for the generosity of everyone in the room and also in the digital rooms, and that our lighting designer Cha Si is working with a technician in another space that's operating the lights in the room, or our projections designer Yi Nam is going to be working tirelessly to edit this together with the green screen. And you know, we have an editor and an incredible sound designer, Melanie Chen Cole, and just all these people have decided my little play is worth pouring their time and energy into, and Mayi and NYU are being very, very generous, but I just don't think there's ever a dollar amount that equates to what artists put into their work. And so to be on the receiving end of it, at least on my imagination, to whatever this iteration's execution is, I just am overflowing with generosity for all of these artists who are taking my perverse sense of humor, and, you know, there's dark comedy and real tragedy and hopefully light and laughter in there, and helping to fully realize that. And, you know, when we just do simple table reads of it, we find ourselves laughing and joking. And Ralph one day said, oh, this is what I miss about theater. And we got to tap into it here, even if it's in Zoom with shitty internet and people disconnecting, you know, and lagging and whatnot. The magic was still there to tap into. And so I'm so appreciative and excited about what that will potentially be, and to share it, of course.
This is so exciting. So you mentioned time and energy, but also there's so much love in this play.
Yeah.
And I mean, I won't spoil it, obviously, because people need to see it if they can. And definitely read it when it's published. but it's, let me see, how can I say this without like going into like details about the story?
You're being so good about not spoiling things. Thank you.
I'm trying. I mean, we get so few pleasures these days, right? That not spoiling stuff for others. I would say that it's about giving love and having love almost be like a gift, and that love goes to someone else, and then someone else, and then someone else, and then by the end of the play, I felt like you had figuratively, I guess, given me your play. And I don't know how to explain that.
No, that was beautiful. That was beautifully articulated. Thank you. That was a gift to me to hear you say that. So thank you.
It was so exciting. This is going to be like emotional March, apparently, for me.
I mean, we're hitting a year mark, and I feel like everyone's Facebook posts about I was here last year, or look at me when, and it has been, you know, triggering in one sense, and just also a mark of resiliency. I hope that while the joke is it's March still, also we've made it a whole other year, and not without tragedy and real hardships for many folks, but we're also still here, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I choose to believe that, and people are working really hard to, while I don't want to say get back to normal, but to at least get to be together again. I do feel efforts being made there, progress, and I'm liking everyone's vaccine card selfies, you know. Nothing makes me happier. I don't care how you got it, when you got it. There's no shame in it. Every person getting vaccinated feels like such a huge leap in progress and in hope. So, yeah, March is a hard month. I agree with you there. And it's okay to be emotional about it.
Okay, thank you so much. I don't want to go back and ask you about the things that you wish you had seen, because then this would be like also like so
we
emotional.
Go down a rabbit hole of everything we couldn't see.
But I want to ask you instead about the things that you loved doing. I mean, you were a guest last, let's say like late summer, early fall, and it's been a while. So, you know, how did you feel, I guess, at theater in community void inside you?
I went through sort of an ebb and flow relationship with Zoom theater, and I at times feel so frustrated or impotent in what it can and cannot do, and then other times I would be reading someone's work or witnessing someone else's collaboration, and it would surprise me how I could get swept up into it again, and that there's been a level of access that wouldn't have happened prior to this. There is an awareness about needing to, say, pay artists for their time, or a value and a recognition for that. And Also, I've just been able to see people or gather in rooms with folks that I wouldn't have otherwise. And so sometimes I get frustrated that I can't touch my scene partner or hug my fellow ensemble members or really feel what the chemistry or the alchemy or the pheromones in a room are. And other times I get caught by surprise when it does work. And I think maybe that's the mark of storytelling or good storytelling or generosity in whatever room it may be, whether it's digital or not. And so when we last talked, I think I had done a reading of a play called Mike Pence's Sex Dream. And then in the fall, Ensemble Studio Theater fully realized it as much as they could, you know, online. And that felt equal parts frustrating that, you know, you don't have an audience feedback. Rehearsals were very different and tech was very different. And my partner felt like it was taking over our entire house. And I try to do Zoom happy hours afterward, like as if it was a post-show drink and gathering. And there was something special in that, and that people could watch it anywhere in the world. And my castmates or the designers and I would get texts at 4 a.m. or 2 p.m. and people had seen it, you know, at hours that you normally don't think people are watching a full length play. And so there's something special about getting to share that there. And, you know, I've done other readings and workshops, and I think I'm trying to find the generosity and the joy in it each time while mourning the loss of the in-person, the in the same space. And I think it's a day-to-day negotiation, and it changes sometimes minute to minute, and that's okay too. Yeah, it's just a process.
You are a huge reader. bibliophile, I guess is the right word. So
yes.
I'm curious if, you know, like given this love for storytelling that you have and no pressure, Daniel,
mm-hmm.
is writing a novel, for instance, like something that you want to do at some point?
Oh, totally. I, you know, it took me a long time to give myself permission to want to write a play or say that I was a playwright. And now I've been devouring fiction in a way, especially fiction that is blurring nonfiction and fiction, the way Nomadland as a movie is doing that, or people point to authors' first books as their most autobiographical. And I find that every play of mine is very autobiographical. And I think, why not do that with fiction as well? So that is very much an ambition of mine. I know I read at a very rapid rate, but it's because I don't have theater every night, you know, and my partner is a morning person, which means I get maybe one episode of television with him before he falls asleep. And so, and we're not going out clubbing or to bars at night, right? So then he falls asleep, and then I pick up a book or you know, try to scribble something down. But that has been a source of escape. And I give myself silly homework tasks, like I won't pick up my phone while I read this chapter. And that's a great way to avoid doom scrolling. Or I will make myself do a handful of push-ups after this chapter. And then it feels like I'm being active and creative, staying inspired at the same time or something. But I just, I've had to turn elsewhere for my love of going to the theater 3, 4, 7 nights a week. And so I'm grateful for all the art mediums that are out there. And I feel so inspired by a whole other community of artists. And I think book Twitter is its own thing. And Asian American authors have been really a huge, I mean, they don't know it unless, you know, I try to tweet at them maybe, but it's been a huge source of inspiration and hope and spaces of empathy. And I find it's so remarkable that there are so many, whereas when I was growing up, I felt like I couldn't touch one book, you know, that was by an Asian American author. And now I have shelves and shelves of them and stacks of them in my to-read pile. So that's something special and something worth celebrating for sure.
It's like, as for the people who are not as, like, you know, organized as you are, your play, when it's published, is going to be one of those shelves, right?
I dream of the day of being published as a playwright. I thought to myself today that there are two-person shows that I did a couple years ago, The Gentleman Caller by Philip Dawkins and The Chinese Lady by Lloyd Suh, and I believe they're both published. And I remember when I was in undergrad reading play scripts and seeing the original casts listed in the front pages and thinking, oh, I hope I get to do that, because I always knew I wanted to do new works, and I hope I get to originate roles in that manner. And then I think it was just today, I was thinking, oh, I should buy those scripts and save them as markers of a dream realized. You know, it took a long time, but it happens. And so, in the same way, if when I can publish my own plays, I will throw a party. It is, I think we have to celebrate our milestones now more than ever. So I will put on a silly hat and throw biodegradable confetti in the air and drink nice champagne, and you'll be invited, Jose.
Thank you so much. I hope you don't have to wear helmets or anything like that by then.
Big astronaut head shields and all.
Have you seen those COVID ones?
Yes. They look like the hazmat suits from Breaking Bad, but also like something out of a sci-fi show.
Like horrifying, but also I kind of want one, because I'm like, can I wear shades under it? Anyway, you're so the daughter character.
Yeah.
I'm like, I was reading it, and I was like, I could see you as a daughter, if that makes sense. And yeah. I was like, this is you. It's so beautiful. Anyway, back to...
No, that's not too much of a spoiler. The play that would have gone up last year was an all cis male cast, and I had written that, and I told myself the play following, I wanted to center women, to center female identifying folks, and in gravitating towards that, the story surrounds a group of, and then, you know, a very small handful of women. And I'm so grateful that you recognize my DNA in there. And I'm also excited to be centering those actors, especially, and their stories. And the cast we have is just so incredible. And the experiences they bring, and the... It's not even... I hate that word authenticity lately, but I'll go back to DNA instead, that... and an empathy and a shared understanding of the folks in the room, whether or not they're Korean or Korean American. And that has been really powerful and joyous to witness, even as they're going on a one-on-one basis to record. And, you know, our great stage manager, Alex, is reading opposite them. And the actors are just, you know how people joke how famous movie stars leave set and then the poor co-star has to read with a PA or whatever? These actors are all reading with our stage manager, who's doing a great job. But it's amazing. You know, you know these actors are talented when they're having to create everything on top of being in front of a green screen. It must be how, like, Marvel movie stars feel. My cast are future Marvel stars. I'm saying it now. You heard it here first.
I love that so much. And speaking of, you know, working, obviously, while production on your show was halted because of the pandemic, you've been doing a lot of work and you've been seeing a lot of work. So I wonder how going back, which, yay, that you're back at work.
Yay.
How does going back to work and doing, you know, television feel after you have been doing theater and you have been seeing theater meant and made for a screen as well? I wonder if you're, I don't know, has anything in your muscle memory or something been like, huh, this is kind of...
I had a couple thoughts flash through my head. One is, I think I wonder about this generation that has lived in front of front-facing cameras their whole life and what that'll do to quote-unquote genuine responses when you always know what you look like. And I think there's been a fatigue and an oversaturation of seeing oneself in Zoom, especially for the muggles, non-acting folk who now know what they look like. You know, I had a friend once, I think it was Ali An, who is a Korean-American actor, and she said to me once, "Daniel, we have to be careful because we have resting bitchy Asian face." And I laughed so hard at that. But now how many people have seen themselves in Zoom and thought, "Oh, I have a resting, you know, bored face," or a resting, you know, condescending face. Anyway, that's just one thought I had. But I hit set last week, I believe, and we did something called a COVID tech rehearsal. And they walked us through what a normal day would look like in these non-normal circumstances of the pandemic. And I felt such love and generosity to be back on set, to be with my cast of billions and the crew and whomever could return based on their availability and, you know, if they booked another job or not. And it was just so special to be there. And I'm fortunate on Billions that my set for my character is really just one two-story set piece. And it feels like going to a theater for me, at least, because I know where my backstage dressing room is, and I know, you know, where I get food, say, or where the restrooms are. And a lot of our actors are theater practitioners as well. And so it felt like going home to a theater in that way. And while not being able to hug or having folks keep us 6 feet apart and everyone having masks and face shields and all these other protocols are in place, I felt an immense generous spirit in the room, in gratitude. And while there are some folks who have still been busy working, and go them, I personally haven't touched a film or TV set since I left, you know, 51 weeks ago. I think our director of photography posted, you know, we just had a casual 51-week hiatus. And it was just so special to be there again. And I have to say, though, even before the pandemic, I'm recalling this one story. I can't remember the very specifics of it, but I think we had someone on crew that was subbing in for the day that wasn't part of the core cast. And they were sort of like rolling their eyes or muttering about something. And they were frustrated. It was either like time constraints or something about the pressure of the day. And I remember David Costable, who plays Wags, saying, hey, we don't do that on this set. If you have a problem, you say so, but we're all here because we are so fucking lucky to be here. And so if you have any issue, you just communicate about it. We're not muttering under the breath, complaining kind of people. Everyone wants to be here, is happy and grateful to be here, and wants to do this work. And I just got to witness that. You know, it was by me. I think it was a big crowd scene. And I've always thought that that is true of our show. And so to have the pandemic halt us for this long, and then for everyone to still come together and overcome these odds and obstacles and hardships and just try again is so remarkable and so such a testament of what this show means to people, but also just storytelling for this art form, for a collective fuck you to the pandemic and not letting it hold storytellers down. And every department, every person there is just working their asses off to keep us and each other safe and to keep the engine going against all odds. And that there's just no amount of praise or credit that can be given to that, or dollar sign. I just wish we could make everyone millionaires. People are working so hard. And that's just one set, you know. There were other shows that started up even earlier, movies and, you know, even theater projects I hear of that have happened in person. And that's so much more than anyone ever expected. It's hard enough to make a story in the first place. And yet now we have COVID protocols to also throw in there and inflate the budget and make everything more difficult. And yet people are still trying. We are still overcoming, and that's incredible.
That, yeah, sounds like, I don't know, like goosebump inducing, I guess, or giving. It must be so cool. I miss people so much, and it's like so weird too. Yeah. Sorry. This is kind of like a Meryl Streep / Marvel hero kind of question for you.
Okay.
So, you know, what is it like to go back and be playing a character that you haven't played in so long? Was it like, I don't know, like seeing an old friend? Was it like putting on a jacket that you forgot you had? Or was it much less metaphysical and more like, let's do this than that?
I find that I am both an inside out and an outside in actor. And my character, Ben Kim, has, I don't want to say a uniform, but there are, you know, a handful of shoes that are my character's, or these J. Crew pants that I wear. This, it's usually a white t-shirt with a button down or a polo shirt over it, and then another layer of a fleece vest or a zip-up jacket of some sort, because, you know, I've learned offices are cold, and so everyone, no matter what time of the year, wears layers in the offices, it seems like. And I was grateful that my costume fit, and that was the common joke amongst the cast, whether or not they fit. One actor was like, my pinky ring doesn't even fit, and I thought that was the funniest thing. And when I put that on, and when I have, you know, I have a set, it does feel like familiar things coming back. And I find that my character speaks in a certain way, and cadence and tone, and the environment and the people I play off of. It sort of felt like putting on a comfy, familiar hoodie again. You know the smell, you know the texture, and it's just nice to put it on. And I'm lucky that I play a nice little character, you know. He's a nice guy, and so it's nice to put that on. Not to say I wouldn't mind playing, you know, terrible douchebags or horrible people, and that wouldn't be fun to wear again too. But I found that the costumes and the sets really brought me back to something that, you know, it's a journey since 2015, so it is very familiar in some ways, but never a complacency, luckily, because of the writing and the challenges of the show, but definitely an ownership, and it's nice to say hi to that friend again. So.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm so happy for you.
Thanks.
And, you know, out of all the, like, the different mediums, I guess, or the ways to explore the medium that you got to try since the pandemic started, because I feel like you've done, like, visual, like album storytelling kind of things, like audio, like you've done every version basically of what the digital theater could offer. Was there one, or are there elements from all of them maybe that you want to bring along with you as you go into your future as a theater maker? I mean, fingers crossed when things reopen. But even if not, are there elements from digital theater that you are like, yes, I'll keep you in me forever?
Yeah. A number of things. For me, equal access is really important. And I found that theater prices can be, or just are, oppressive at times. And the way that people can reach it now, and hopefully can continue to, I hope, is a practice we keep and prioritize, so that the people who normally wouldn't get to see these stories get to see them. You know, say Hamilton on Disney Plus as an example, or National Theater Live being free as another example. And I think that's so important to foster the next generation of theater lovers and attendees, And then I also think about, there's this one project I've worked on for three acts now. It's a five-act play called Nero by Kyung Park, who's also directing it. And he has this amazing costume designer, Andrew Jordan, who just sent us costume pieces from the waist up. And just, I know a lot of thought and care and work went into it, but there was also like this rapid turnaround of, this is the idea, now it is in your mailbox, and now you put it on and you do it, that I'm familiar with on film and TV a lot more. And to get to do that in theater, I'm the actor that loves the rehearsal skirt or the, you know, the rehearsal prop. Like, I love that tangible stuff. And I see that being more in play in a way, but with people's own homes, essentially, and their own props. And I did a reading once, and the character I played just kind of popped in and out over and over again. And I just thought, how do I make this fun for myself? Zoom theater can feel so redundant. So I just changed my shirt every scene. And it was just a small thing that I did for me, but it made, you know, people started commenting and laughing and texting me about it. And I thought, oh, right. If I'm having fun, other people are having fun. And isn't that so important? With this fairy tale play, Once Upon a Korean Time, I see these actors making ridiculous large choices that you normally would think, oh, that's not, is that appropriate or is that too big? And at this point, I just think there are no rules, zero fucks, let's explore everything and give permission to it. And that's where the surprising laughter comes from, or the gut punch. And I want to be more open to that going forward too. It's like we've broken the rules, and rather than going back to them as in the way they were before, how do we sort of like take from it? I find that I'm a magpie in my writing, and I'm always taking the shiny things I like around me. And as an actor, I'm not of one method, and I just take things that I like. And so maybe we just do that as an industry. We just pick and choose things that we've enjoyed and you know, go back to the things we missed too, and create something new out of it.
Yep, I always say syncretism for the win. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
Get everything you get from the buffet.
Yes. And then you never know what flavors will be good there.
Given the lack of, you know, like feedback in terms of applause and cheers and everything that you get from, you know, acting on stage, can you talk a little bit about how people who love your work, that's a good word to call them, you know, because it's like audience members, fans, but you know, like so many other things. Has that relationship, you know, obviously nothing can replace that energy, but how has that energy, you know, the applause energy, manifested or transformed into something else in this year?
I think about maybe some, I don't know if it's pithy, but just, there's the advice given to young actors to not do it for the applause, to not do it for the laughs, to not do it for the tears or the accolades. And I think that is more important than ever. And I think about, my mind's going in multiple directions. It was just the Golden Globes this past weekend, right? And I think about how the HFPA were called out for their lack of representation in the group. And I am of a mind that that does need to be dealt with, absolutely. And also, I celebrate that Minari and Nomadland won those awards and how much those movies meant to me and the people who were a part of that, while also holding space for the bullshit that Minari was considered a foreign language film, even though it's an American film. And, you know, that multiple truths can be true at once, or I can hold space for all of the above. And I think that also applies in this applause laughter thing of I miss it. I miss the feedback. I do theater because I love the relationship with the audience, and it I sometimes trace it to my religious upbringing, but I name it as church. I hold the theater in a sacred space, and the rituals and the gathering and the, audience in a dark space breathing together, the heartbeats synchronizing. I think that is holy and magical. And so I do miss that. And I've also come to appreciate a simple text message, a DM on Instagram or Twitter or a tweet. It's like those little things that I thought I wouldn't ever care about actually became so much more important. And I had a tiny pod of friends, and I did this play last year for high school students, and my partner and I and two of our friends came over and we watched it on YouTube being live streamed. And I thought, oh, a viewing experience for me prior to this would be dozens and dozens of friends, or a packed movie theater or something like that, a packed theater. And instead, the four of us watched this ensemble of high school students reading words that I had written, and that I fucking loved that so much. And that was so special in ways that I think a pre-pandemic Daniel would say, well, that's so small or so, quiet. And instead the quiet has become louder. The small has meant more and is of deeper impact. And maybe that's something to keep holding on to, so that it's not about packed stadiums or standing ovations or huge responses, and people listen differently and people interact with art differently, and I think it'll continue to be different, and I'm curious to see where that will go.
Daniel, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Like, thank you especially for coming back and being our favorite guests, and also people out there doing work, but also just like people. I make no sense when I get emotional, sorry. But thank you. Thank you really for being back here with us. Do you want to tell our viewers and our listeners where they can find every Daniel K. Isaac thing they can stream, watch, buy?
Of course. Thank you for having me. Thank you for being my lifeline to theater throughout this pandemic, Jose, and for continuing to elevate and showcase theater practitioners during these times. I think that's so amazing, and so thank you for that. And if you want to watch a group of intrepid high school students performing a play based on interviews they conducted during the pandemic, there's something called The Hope Project on YouTube. I think it's available to watch. So The Hope Project by Daniel K. Isaac, I think that search should pull it up. And upcoming, I have Once Upon a Korean Time by yours truly, directed by Ralph B. Pena, as a collaboration with Mai Theater Company and NYU, which will be available for free in April, I believe April 7th, and it'll stream for 4 days or so. And I'll make sure to blast that on Twitter and Instagram, where you can find me at Daniel K. Isaac, ISAAC, not two S's, the biblical spelling. And Billions, there's 5.5 seasons available, and we are hard at work to finish season 5 for you now and get into season 6. And I really love the show The Other Two on Comedy Central, which I think is now on HBO Max. So go watch that. And I'll keep working hard to get stories out there for everyone. And please stay safe. And thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. And also take care of yourself, Daniel.
You too. You too.
That looked very threatening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat, and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. SUFS has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.